Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome back to another edition of Top Turnbuckle here on Sportsnet590.ca. Just myself, Rob Wong, and Rudy Blair today. Everybody else, once again.
Hey, you barely have me here too, man. I've got some kind of cough that's been going around in the newsroom, and it's been knocking people out left and right. In fact, that's why one of the shows I wasn't here, because I literally lost my voice.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So it's sort of clearing up, but because, as anybody knows, when it clears up, you suddenly have that little, yes, I'm going to use the word mucus, in your throat. So if you hear me coughing, folks, it's just me trying to clear that up so we can do a good show here for you.
I was going to say, I totally forgot that week that you missed. So, you know, I think I'm the only one left that has been on every show so far, but I will be gone in 2 weeks. So I know my Iron Man streak is going to come to an end, unfortunately.
Yeah, but technically I was on the show, because if you remember, my interview with Tristratus.
That's true.
Was on it. So technically, I haven't missed a show yet.
In spirit, you were in on the show.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about the week that has been so far in the WWE. Let's start with some, you know, topics that weren't on this week's Raw. Let's start with the Hall of Fame, of course, and the newest WWE inductee. Mil Máscaras was named on Monday to the Hall of Fame class of 2012. And, I mean, his tenure in WWE wasn't very long. A couple months in the mid-90s. I remember he took part, I think it was the 96 Royal Rumble, and he didn't really last long after that, but obviously a huge wrestler in Mexico, one of the greatest of all time. And I mean, what do you remember about Mil Máscaras? I mean, you'd probably have more memory about him than I do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a high flyer. He was one of the original high flyers, and of course, wearing the mask, wrestling in the old WWWF. He had a lot of matches with superstar Billy Graham, even though he didn't win the title. He was actually the first wrestler allowed back in Madison Square Garden to wear a mask, because there was a time where wrestlers weren't allowed to wear masks at the Garden.
Right.
But he was the first one back to do this. And, of course, people remember some of his legendary battles in Los Angeles. One thing I do want to note, though, as much as a pioneer that he wasn't really the most liked guy in the, back with the guys, because he was one of those guys who would not do, as they call, the honor. If one guy said, you know, I should win this match or whatever, he never wanted to do that. He wanted to win every one of his matches. So he wasn't the most light guy in the locker room, but you could not take anything away from his skills. I mean, he looked strong. He could fly. He had a lot of moves. I mean, a lot of the airborne flyers that you see today, they learned a lot from what he did in the past. In fact, you look at somebody like a Ricky Steamboat from back in the 80s, you have to move down that line and look at him to know where Steamboat got a lot of his moves, too.
And we really don't see that type of wrestling anymore. I mean, we see the smaller guys, CM Punk, Chris Jericho. They're sort of, you know, a dying breed. They're still, you know, the high flyers. I mean, Rey Mysterio's still around. And who's the other guy I'm thinking of right now that's hurt right now in the WWE? I can't think of the mask guy.
Oh, yeah. I know you're thinking of, and I can't think of either.
I got a brain cramp.
And here's the reason why.
He gets hurt all the time.
That's why he keeps going in and out. But you folks know who we're talking about anyway. So, But I agree with you. I mean, you know, you got a lot of these high flyers. Here's the one thing, though, these guys are all small guys. These guys are, like, you know, within the 220-pound mark. Mil Máscaras was 245, 250. So a guy that big, who was almost sort of a bodybuilder, and being able to do what he did, really amazing.
Sin Cara is the guy.
Sin Cara,
I was trying to think of. Should also mention that Alberto Del Rio, of course, is the nephew of Mil Máscaras. So definitely continuing the family tradition there. And you know what? We were talking before off air that, you know, maybe we're going to talk about top, musical gimmicks as far as wrestling goes. We should probably do, you know, top masked wrestlers,
because
I think you could go on for quite a while. But so we'll do that later in the show as our random wrestling question. But let's chat about the week that was on Monday Night Raw. And this one was all about the music. And of course, John Cena was supposed to do his rap. And we're supposed to have a Rock concert, Rock Concert 3, if you will. And I mean, geez, I don't know what to say, because when I first heard about that they were going to do this week, I thought, why? I mean, you guys came off such a high over the last couple of weeks with just straight promos getting in each other's face, and all of a sudden we have to go to the gimmicks? Like, I don't understand. Of course, John Cena comes out, and it's old school John Cena, for one, comes out to the old, you know, Word Life theme song, and he's dressed like, you know, Thugonomics John Cena. I thought that was an interesting touch. That was kind of cool, actually. And he, you know, did his thing like he did, you know, 8-10 years ago with all the rap and stuff. And then, of course, we see The Rock later doing the Rock concert. Wow. I mean,
I'm curious, though. And I know you're the one who asked the questions. I'm going to throw it to you. What did you think of seeing old school Cena coming back?
I thought it was pretty cool, actually, because I missed that John Cena. I mean, I've been on YouTube a couple of times watching the old gimmicks and, you know, his goofy personality. I like that John Cena, the 14A John Cena, if you will, not the PG John Cena that we see right now. And I kind of miss that. And I understand the fact that, you know, he is the biggest baby face of the company. He's not exactly, you know, he's been bringing it back of late. He's been getting more aggressive, you know, saying things like Hoski and taking all these jabs at The Rock. So I do like that, but clearly it's just to build up, you know, this feud with him and The Rock heading into WrestleMania. It's not really, you know, that type of personality that they want John Cena to have and, you know, show all his, you know, fans that are out there that are the kids. But I mean, like I just said, I don't get why they had to do this musical gimmick with these two guys. They were doing just fine, and they throw this wrinkle in there, and it's disappointing that they have to take this route to try and get some kind of reaction out of fans and people watching at home.
I think they were pushing more towards trying to get The Rock, you know, his funny liners and his funny songs and, you know, the words that he has in his songs and he throws it together. What I'll tell you something. I absolutely agree with you about John Cena. I loved seeing old school Cena. When he came out, you know, with the chain around his neck and, you know, the hat flip back, my first thought was, oh, no, not this.
Yeah.
But it's what he said and how he said it. And if you notice the reaction from the audience, before he was walking down that aisle, people were booing him.
Yeah.
When he walked back up the aisle, they were cheering him because he came off real. He understood the audience. He understood the city. He made references to the city. And he basically said, hey, look, I'm not going to be pushed around by some guy who doesn't come down here and do what I do every day for you guys. And he came off to me very legit. And I know people are still trying to figure out, is there real heat? Isn't there real heat? You know what? Whether there is or isn't, you can feel and believe that there could be some serious heat going on. Now, going back to you, and I'll throw the question back to you, my friend, The Rock, what did you think of him?
Well, you know what? I'm thinking about it right now, and I think I would have preferred it had they not promoted it as a rap rock concert. Had John Cena just come out dressed like old school John Cena, I would have went like, wow, I didn't expect that. And then he did his rap. And like you said, I mean, he really got over with the rap after he left. The fans, you know, started cheering him a little bit, and I really enjoyed that. I mean, with The Rock, does he really need the guitar? I mean, we've seen it forever and ever. He just has to come out. He can come out naked and just say whatever he wants, and the fans will eat it up. The fact that he has to, you know, play these songs, I mean, it was entertaining, it was funny, but, I mean, at this point, this is supposed to be the main event of WrestleMania. It's supposed to start getting serious. It is verbally, but the fact that they had to throw in this wrinkle with the rap and rock concert, I just thought it was kind of dumb.
Here's the thing that I'm feeling with The Rock, and I said this last in our last podcast. The problem with The Rock is it's the same gimmick, and people eventually get tired of that gimmick, which is why eventually you start hearing Rocky Sucks.
Yeah. Well, they started chanting Tooth Fairy.
They started chanting Tooth Fairy. Exactly. So I'm already feeling like there's a wave starting to shift a little bit. Now, yes, when he goes to Miami and he wrestles against John Cena, people will be cheering for The Rock. It would not surprise me if maybe 20 or 30% start cheering for John Cena. Because, like I said, John Cena is coming off as real. John Cena is coming off as your buddy. John Cena is coming off as a guy next door that has to go out and work every day to make a living. The Rock is coming off really as this Hollywood schmuck, you know, who thinks, okay, everybody loves me no matter what I say and do. I'm going to say a little joke and smile.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to love me. And it's like, no, wait a minute. You know what, man? No, it's not that way, because where were you when I needed that inspiration? Where were you when I wanted to see action? Where were you? You were up in Hollywood making movies. And I think people are starting to see that more. So because The Rock comes off as an actor, are people starting to think, are you just acting in front of us?
Yeah.
Because when you saw what John Cena did, I really believed that's the John Cena that I've always known. And what he said is exactly how he feels.
And like you said before, it seems like it's really starting to get personal, whether, you know, you believe the reports out there that there is legitimate heat. But, I mean, Rock saying things about Cena's wife and his mom and Cena's, you know, talking about how he got surgery on his pecs, you know, back in the late 90s. That was hilarious, I thought. But, I mean, I'll... I like the fact that, like, there is legitimate heat, and in the back of my mind, I wonder, you know, when this match goes down April 1st, are there going to be some stiff punches? Like, is there going to be legitimate, like, physicality in this match?
I think there could be, and I'll tell you something, too, and again, maybe, you know, our listeners are going to disagree. I think if it really went legit, I think that Cena would kick his ass.
Yeah.
I really think so, and the only reason why I'm saying that is because, yeah, Rock is a, you know, he's a specimen. You know, I mean, I've seen the guy bench, I think it was like over 500 pounds. We've seen on the DVD, I mean, he's benching, I think it was like four or five plates, something like that.
Something stupid.
Something like that. But you also know, too, Cena can do the same thing. And some of the things that we've seen where Cena had the Big Show and there was somebody else on Big Show on his shoulders and he's walking around with these guys. Cena's got magnificent strength. So, and because that he is so sharp, because he's in the ring all the time, I would give it to Cena.
And another interesting wrinkle to this is, I mean, we've heard some wrestlers, some of the top guys, CM Punk, Dolph Ziggler even, they've been kind of vocal about, you know, The Rock's return. And some, I mean, CM Punk especially doesn't think that a guy like The Rock should be getting the main event. It should go to somebody that's on the road, you know, 250 days a year. But I was reading something about Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he was saying, you know, The Rock earned this. I mean, he has earned the right to just come back and do whatever he wants. He spent 10 years, you know, honing his craft. He was the top guy, and he's allowed to come back, and you know, whatever he wants, the WWE should give to him. Do you agree with that?
I don't have a problem with that. I don't have the problem with The Rock coming back. Mind you, now, when I'm watching this thing, I actually started thinking about, and maybe I'm way off topic. I got a feeling they came up with this thing from back in the 90s, or was it late 90s, early 2000, with Hulk Hogan and Sting.
Right.
With that whole, you know, buildup. You know, with Sting, you know, becoming the Crow, and, you know, and finally with the NWO and taking down Hogan, it kind of felt, it started feeling that same thing. The only difference is that they kept it on a really serious note. And like what you said, going back to this whole comedy thing, it's not needed for this. Keep it serious. Keep this legit. Do I think The Rock should be allowed to come back for WrestleMania? Why not? Let's face it. All the guys going to be making big money to have The Rock in on the show like this.
Yeah, and I mean, Dolph Ziggler has said as much. It's just more eyes on the WWE, more mainstream media checking it out, and he gets to steal the show.
Yeah.
As he likes to say. And I like you mentioned the Hogan-Sting thing. I mean, Sting didn't say anything for who knows how long. All he did was come down, point the bat, and everybody would freak out, and it was really a fantastic build-up.
And I remember that so much because everybody who was anybody into wrestling could not wait for that match. Now, did it live up to everything? No, it didn't. But just the buildup and the anticipation. I mean, I had guys over at my place watching it on pay-per-view. It was just one of those things where you just like, oh my God, they kept building this up, and now here it is. I think fans are going to get a bit of that same feeling. The only difference is, if you start to get into that comedy thing, I think it loses out a bit on that.
Yeah, and I think that's the unfortunate part right now. Hopefully they get more serious in the next couple of weeks leading up to it, because it's going really well,
yeah.
I think. Surprisingly well. I thought they'd really botch it by now, so they've been doing that a lot lately. But.
Well, let me just jump in. I think it's interesting, too, if you folks notice that you haven't really seen John Cena in the ring. They're really making sure. Now, look, you guys are healthy. We're going to keep you healthy. So you're probably not going to see Cena in the ring that much, if ever, until WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. That's the surprising part that, well, I mean, you know, somebody has to wrestle, but it's interesting that CM Punk and Chris Jericho have been wrestling like every week and really putting themselves in danger. But luckily, I mean, they are the third main event in this one. I still think a lot of people are expecting it to be the match of the night. But Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. We already talked about this last week a little bit, how, you know, basically everybody except David Alter agreed that they like the wrinkle that Shawn Michaels has thrown into this, and they really played it up this week, you know, where Undertaker was saying, you know, I will accept whatever happens in the match, whether I win or lose, but it better be pure. You better call it right down the line. And Shawn kind of said, well, you know, I know who's going to win, and that's that. And then you saw him walk back to the top of the aisle. Triple H came out, gave him the old crotch chop. Well, not really the crotch chop. It was the half suck it, if you will. And that kind of put it in the back of your mind. Okay, maybe these two guys, you know, they've been chirping each other, but maybe they are in cahoots. And you know, who knows what's going to happen at WrestleMania now.
But as we all know, Shawn Michaels has always turned on his partners at some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
We know Marty Jannetty is still feeling the lumps and taking the glass out of the back of his head. So we all know this. So as when it comes to wrestling, there's always twists down that road. And just because those two may look like they're buddies, remember what was planted earlier with Triple H. He called his buddy, his partner, a loser. You think that's not going to be sitting in Shawn Michaels' head going, really, I'm a loser?
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. Both of you guys should realize I'm the man in charge. I'm the man in control. I can decide at any time who I want to win. It's not going to be him. And I tell you something, it wouldn't surprise me if neither one of them wins now, you know?
Yeah.
Anything can happen with this. And I love the fact that there's mystery in this. Throwing Shawn Michaels in it, I think, is fantastic because, as we all know, I mean, 19-0, you keep thinking over and over again, okay, it's not even so much if The Undertaker's going to lose, it's how he's going to win. This time around, now you have no idea.
Yeah, there really is serious doubt this time.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a chance that The Undertaker may lose. I still don't think they'll do it. I mean, I don't think after all these years and the fact that he hasn't wrestled in a year, they would bring him back just to lose, you know, become 19-1. I think that'd be an unfortunate way for The Undertaker to go out. But I mean, like you said, there's just so many twists that this match could potentially, you know, go. Just, you know, Shawn Michaels turn on Triple H. Does he, you know, beat up The Undertaker? Does Triple H beat up Shawn Michaels? And I don't know. There's so many ways it can go.
Well, you know, fans should also realize, too, that, you know, when Shawn Michaels and Triple H had their war, I mean, they had a best of three.
Yeah.
Who won that best of three? It was Triple H, not Shawn Michaels. So that could also be, excuse me, folks, like I said, the cough is in there. That could be also another factor to remember, too, that, you know, Triple H has put himself in a position of basically saying that he was and is the best wrestler in the world. Now, when you have somebody who is considered the best performer, you really think that's going to sit well with him? And then, of course, when you have The Undertaker, who has the winning streak in WrestleMania, the greatest wrestler to ever wrestle in the biggest event of all time, I mean, there are just so many obstacles on this thing that you just don't know what's going to happen. I think it's great that they're putting that mix. This is the kind of soap opera wrestling is all about.
Yeah, and I mean, go figure. It's the three of the top guys ever, you know, putting this together and making it work so perfectly. We were talking about John Cena and The Rock before, but, you know, the realism there. CM Punk, Chris Jericho just took an odd turn in their feud. And basically, you know, Punk beat The Miz in a match on Monday Night Raw. And then Chris Jericho showed up on the screen and revealed some information, you know, something that he found out and said, yeah, the reason that CM Punk is straight edge is because his father is an alcoholic. And Jericho is going to beat Punk so bad at WrestleMania that he's going to force him to the bottle. And that's going to be the end of CM Punk. Like we said before, with the Rock and rap gimmick, that was sort of an odd twist. And this, I don't know. Can you explain what's going on here?
They're reaching. Because they're seeing all these other guys having this, as you said, is all there. Right now, there is no real heat between the two. Now, if the WWE was really smart, I would have went out and got Chris Brown, okay, to walk down that aisle with Jericho. Because as everybody knows, there's real heat between with Chris Brown and, of course, CM Punk.
Yeah.
Now, imagine you're the champion and you got some punk that you've been on Twitter saying, I want to fight you, walk down with the guy who wants to take your title. That is real heat. Coming up with, oh, yeah, your dad's an alcoholic and your mom's a prostitute and your sister's whatever. It's made up. It's not real. You've got all these other things with real heat. And then this, it's like what I was saying before, too. You've got two wrestlers that can really talk the talk, and you really haven't had a chance to see it. You've had everybody else basically beating them at that punch on that. So now trying to create heat that there's no heat, you know what? You might as well put in anybody together for something like this. There's nothing really here right now other than the fact that you've got two excellent wrestlers who can go at it to watch. Other than that, there's nothing behind this.
And I think that might be the saving grace. I mean, I really have been disappointed with the buildup on this. I mean, I'm still excited, luckily, because, you know, it's two of the top guys in the biz. But like you said, it's a massive reach that they're just grasping at straws, trying to get something to build this up. I mean,
Chris Brown, man, I'm telling you, you get Chris Brown in this.
I don't think Chris would have done it just for PR reasons. I don't think he would come down because then people would, you know, go crazy on him. But, I mean,
I'd take it for one night. I would take it.
For one night, maybe.
For one night, I would take it. And then what I would do if I was Chris Brown, I would say, I'm taking the money that I've made from this, and I'm donating it to some woman's shelter or whatever else. he'd actually end up looking like a good guy. He just lets everybody call him whatever names or whatever they want, and then that one night he donates the money and goes back to his music career. His music career isn't going to hurt from
this.
No,
that's true.
That's why I'm saying, man, go do it. WWE, go get him.
Yeah, the fact that it hasn't hurt his music career is kind of surprising.
Yeah, very much.
But I mean, like I was just saying about the Jericho Punk, I mean, it's grasping for straws, and you would have thought, you know, when WWE decided to bring Jericho back and said, okay, we're going to build this up to Punk, the fact that it looks like they have no ideas as to how to get this going is so mind-boggling. But all the other ones that we thought, you know, were going to be tough sells or tough to get people over with Rock and Cena, Undertaker, Triple H, two matches that, you know, didn't look like, you know, they was going to have a lot of build-up. It's, like I said, it's mind-boggling. I don't know what's going on here.
Well, it's because, and I'm going back again, that whole thing of bringing back Chris Jericho as this angry old veteran who's saying that everybody is stealing his moves. I think that's where it went wrong, because you have CM Punk, who is a seasoned veteran in the ring, who is at the top of his game right now. You basically made Chris Jericho come in and say, I'm an old man, and you guys are stealing all my old moves.
Yeah.
That's where I think the mistake came in, because, you know, he doesn't look like that fresh wrestler that we've known and loved. That's why I was saying last week before, what I wished I would have seen was that almost happy-go-lucky, but really nasty and mean kind of Chris Jericho, who was really sarcastic and would talk about, you know, just insulting people, whether they looks or whatever. That's the Jericho that should be going after CM Punk.
Yeah, that's disappointing. Hopefully, you know, they figure it out over the next couple of weeks and get things going before WrestleMania. They are slowly running out of time. Some other things to touch on. We'll just touch on this quickly, only because he's back. But your boy Brodus Clay.
Oh, God, no.
Your boy Brodus Clay returned.
Oh, go away.
There was reports out there that he was kept off TV because Vince McMahon was not happy with his wrestling ability and was really stiff in the ring. And he comes back, and he has a 15-second match against Jinder Mahal. Like, what is that supposed to show Vince McMahon? But, I mean, it's weird because he's still kind of over. He's not Santino Marella over, but when he comes out, people are entertained. And I know we've talked about this before, but I thought I'd just mention it because
that's just cruel. Well, I'm going to make a little leap before. All Jinder right. Mahal, I'm really ticked off at the fact that they don't use him the proper way, because when he first came into the WWE, I actually thought that this guy could be a world champion contender, you know, because he's got the look, he can actually wrestle, and just the fact that I think when you're the World Wrestling Entertainment, world, international, here you have a chance for somebody to really represent a certain ethnic background, I thought would have been great in a championship match. Instead, they've got him losing to this guy who could be a killer, who should be destroying people. If he was the killer that he should be, and he won in 15 seconds, wouldn't have a problem with that. But because he's dancing, and somebody call my mom, what the hell is that supposed to mean? No, I'm serious. I want somebody to let me know, what black person do you know goes, hey, somebody call my mama? Unless you're on some 70 TV show that some guy wrote the script for that you had to read. Black people don't speak that way. Okay, they don't dance that way. It's so stereotypical, it drives me insane. And the fact that if I hear Jerry Lawler keep saying over and over again, somebody call my mama, somebody call my mama, it's like, where is your mama? Here's the phone number. I will call her for you to shut you up. I hate this act.
And that is Rudy's Rants.
Thank you.
Of the week. We should have a segment, Rudy's Rants of the
week.
Oh,
there you go.
And it's probably going to be on stereotypes in the WWE. That's probably what it's going to be about every week. Should also mention that Scott Hall has been released from a WWE-sponsored rehab last week, and that's good to hear.
Yeah.
And apparently he is doing very well. I mean, it's just it's a constant battle, and it's going to be for the rest of his life, it seems, and hopefully he continues to live that life properly, and with his son Cody, who we saw in that E60 documentary that was on Scott Hall. Cody is trying to become a professional wrestler himself. So, I mean, hopefully that is something that Scott Hall can grasp onto and hopefully, you know, keep him sober.
I want people to realize something with Scott Hall. I mean, even though he's known for, you know, the drug abuse that he's done to himself and the problems he's had in wrestling, Scott Hall mind as a wrestler is absolutely brilliant. Some of the things that you see with the, you know, the chop and the too sweet and so many other different things, that was all Scott Hall. He came up with all that kind of stuff. Everybody else just sort of copied and took it and whatever. Scott Hall is an absolute original. If Scott Hall could get all his problems aside, he'd be one of the first guys I'd give a front office job to come up with different ideas and matches, because he is brilliant at that. It's just too bad that, you know, the drugs and alcohol just destroyed him.
Yeah, it really is unfortunate, and I mean, you would have thought that some of his closest friends would have been able to help him, but I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, Kevin Nash and those guys struggled with their own demons.
Kevin,
over the years.
Last time I spoke with Kevin Nash when he was here in Toronto, and actually he made me an honorary NWO member, so yeah, for life. Anyways, he talked a little bit about that with me off camera, and he said he's tried everything, you know, and at some point in time, you just got to say, I can't help you anymore.
Yeah.
You have to help yourself. So, and you know, when they were in TNA, they tried. And, you know, they had a title tag team match. He didn't show up, you know. You can only do so much for people until finally you just got to say, I can't do this anymore. I got to deal with my own. And that's exactly what Kevin Nash did.
And I think the great part, though, is that the WWE has continued to help Scott Hall no matter what. As you know, as long as he's willing to go to rehab, they're willing to pay the bill. And Vince McMahon, I mean, you know, for a company that, you know, a lot of people think sometimes doesn't take care of their wrestlers as well as they should. I mean, it's nice to see that he's a guy they look after.
Hey, you know what? It's great that they're doing that. It's great they take care of their own that way. Now, if you can just get rid of this sorus, whatever, talk to my mama down the street kind of thing, then maybe I'll have some nicer things to say.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to our random wrestling question of the week. And like we said before, let's talk about some of our favorite masked wrestlers. And of course, you know, we mentioned Mil Máscaras, and he's going into the WWE Hall of Fame. And when you think of masks, sometimes you think of the luchadors and guys like Rey Mysterio, Juventud Guerrera, guys like that. But I mean, Mankind wore a mask.
Yes.
Kane wears a mask.
Yeah. Vader. The Rock's dad wore a mask.
The Rock's dad wore a mask.
Sweet Ebony Diamond.
You know, Vader had a mask. I don't know if you can technically call it a mask, but
it was something.
You know, it was something. So, I mean, we'll start with you, Rudy. I mean, just name some of the guys that, you know, don masks that you really enjoyed over the years.
Well, I want fans to realize something, too, that when wrestlers wore the mask, it was that so that to keep that mystery behind that,
yeah.
Which really worked out well when it came to, you know, loser leave mask matches, you know. you know, the one that always stood out for me was the super intelligent destroyer. This guy was a guy who wrestled back in the 70s. He was Canadian. He was huge in Japan, but this guy was just so sneaky and so bad. I loved him, but he always called himself the super intelligent destroyer. Another guy that stood out for me was a guy who was just a big, massive guy, the Mask Superstar. When he wrestled over in the Mid-Atlantic area, I remember that was the first time I had a chance to see him. This guy had a clothesline that could just rip your head off. And he eventually ended up winning the World Tag Team Championship, the NWA World Tag Team Championships with Paul Jones. He eventually also won the Television Championship. And then he eventually went on to the WWE. And you would probably know him as a certain wrestler that wrestled with a certain tag team that was known as Axe and Smash.
Right.
I'm not going to say anything else. I'm just going to let you figure out which one was the mass superstar.
And you know what? If I'm going to touch on some guys, I mean, Rey Mysterio, you know, in my era, he really was the top masked wrestler of his day. It was unfortunate when he took off the mask late in his WCW career. Like you said, it was one of those, you know, loses his mask matches. And he was part of, you know, Conan and all those guys. But, you know, when Rey Mysterio, you know, early in his career, he was the smallest guy around, but he could have the most exciting matches.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, his WWE career, for the most part, has, you know, been injury riddled at times. He's, you know, won the heavyweight titles and stuff. But the unfortunate part about him, I don't think he's got the mic skills to be a main eventer. He's fantastic in the ring, and it's always the small guys that struggle the most. But, I mean, for me, when I think of mass wrestlers, I mean, Rey Mysterio definitely at the top. Blue Blazer was a guy that I really enjoyed in the late 80s. Of course, Owen Hart and unfortunately, the tragic death for Owen when he was as the Blue Blazer. Ultimo Dragon in WCW was awesome. We talk about, you know, Rey Mysterio and all the athletic ability that he had. I mean, Ultimo Dragon, WCW, Dean Malenko. I mean, those matches, I mean, I remember those, and those were just incredible bouts between those two guys. His WWE career, also not as good, But I mean, you know, WCW, when they had the cruiserweight division, they employed a lot of those guys, whether it was, you know, Psychosis or La Parca. I mean, they really had a fantastic stable of masked wrestlers.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to throw in two other names if I didn't. And this is for history. Mr. Wrestling 2 was a fantastic wrestler back in the 70s. There was actually a Mr. Wrestling and Mr. Wrestling 2, but it was Mr. Wrestling 2 that really took off for a lot of fans. Also, the Mask Assassins, they were a tag team, but it was Mask Assassin 2 again that really stood out. And again, these guys are all trailblazers when it came to the masks. So you know what? I wish we can get more of those, because I think that's what's missing. It's just, again, that mystery, because they were always known as parts unknown. And I love that.
Yeah, they really need to bring back that location.
Yes.
Technically Kane is still from Parts Unknown.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. You know, one day we're going to have to talk about the worst mass wrestlers. We can go on the flip side of the coin.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are a lot of them.
Absolutely.
We talk about the best, there are definitely the worst. Like I said, last week, if you listened to last week's program, we're going to start doing this top WrestleMania moments as we head into our WrestleMania 28 preview show. This week, we will leave you with Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski, who you hear on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast on Sportsnet590.ca. You can also hear it on Sportsnet.ca. We will leave you with their favorite WrestleMania moments. I'm Rob Wong for Rudy Blair. Thanks for listening to Top Turnbuckle.
For me, my favorite WrestleMania match of all time happened at WrestleMania 13. It was Bret Hart versus Steve Austin. Bret Hart, probably the wrestler in the history of the industry who had the best sense of timing and knew how to turn a match and when to turn a match and how to turn himself and how to turn his opponent. Going into this one, and, oh yeah, Ken Shamrock, the special referee in this one. Even he couldn't mess this masterpiece up. Going into this one, it was a submission match. Going into this one, the goal of the match was to turn both guys. So babyface Bret had to turn heel, and heel Austin had to turn babyface. And because of Bret's sense of timing, which is better than anyone else's in this world, the very rare feat of the double turn occurred. So not only was the match a five-star classic, with great use of blood, I should mention, by the way. Now, at that point, WWE, really, or then WWF, really didn't do a lot with blood. It's kind of a no-no, but great use of blood in that match. Bret's sense of timing turned both players, and listen, Bret became the lead heel in the company, and Austin rocketed to the number one babyface in the company. It was all because of Bret. And also, we should point out in this one too, what really made this match was the camera work of Kevin Dunn from WWF, specifically the one shot, the tight shot on Austin's face, blood all over it, trapped in the sharpshooter, passes out, refuses to give up. That great moment by two great performers and one great TV director slash producer, Kevin Dunn, gave me my best WrestleMania match ever.
My favorite WrestleMania match was the moment when I realized that wrestling could be something more than a bunch of crappy gimmicks all being put into the same ring trying to entertain children. And it was the Macho Man Randy Savage versus Ricky Steamboat match in WrestleMania 3. I think this is the favorite for a lot of people of my age bracket. This is the culmination of a six-month feud, a feud that started when Randy Savage had the audacity to crush Ricky Steamboat's larynx on the steel fencing around the ring that separates wrestlers from fans. And it was such a well-done angle that as a child I was legitimately concerned about Ricky Steamboat's ability to consume solid foods. But he turned out to be okay and well enough to wrestle at the Pontiac Silverdome in WrestleMania 3. Now, this match was special to a young Greg Wyshynski because, like I said, it was the first time I realized that wrestling could be wrestling. Like, there were so many close pinfalls, there was such athleticism, there was such a story being told between these two rivals during this marathon match that had opened my eyes to the possibility of wrestling being more than a Hulk Hogan match where all he does is throw three punches, kick a guy, body slam, drop the leg. It did sort of end in a gimmicky way where I think Macho is trying to use the ring bell to crush Ricky Steamboat's throat again, and George Steele pushes him off, and he hits his head on the ring bell. So there's a whole thing there, because George the Animal Steele, mind you, in love with Miss Elizabeth, and who wasn't? Even those of us who weren't hairy with green tongues and consuming turnbuckles. So overall, I felt it was the quintessential wrestling match. It finally made me realize that you can tell a story, you can have an exciting finish, and you can have incredible athleticism between two guys that were actually in shape and not big fat blobs like King Kong Bundy in a match. And from that point on, I realized that that there was more to wrestling than guys dressed as plumbers. So that's my WrestleMania moment.